National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, Howard Braun and Selma Weiss are interviewing Dr. Leah Kessler. This is tape number 8, and it's April 11, 1995. Would you please give us your name?
Leah Kessler.
I almost didn't press it.
All right. I'm going to talk about my own personal family, and I have some insertions that might have been left out as we went along when I talked about other things, and I'll try to fill them in as we go. But I guess one of them that I want to fill in, I know I've talked about my grandparents and how they came, but I came across a letter that I thought was interesting from a historical point of view, reflecting some of the tragedies of the Holocaust. And the letter was from a cousin of mine in California, by the name of Floyd Kessler. And he says, since we spoke, I was able to get some information on Proskorov. You remember that I told you Proskorov was the place of birth of my father and his family. He says, it's 170 miles southwest of Kiev, between Ternopil and Vinnytsia. It was renamed in 1954 by the Soviets to Chelmniki, after a Ukrainian hero, Bogdan the Jew Killer, who fought the Poles. In 1926, the population was 32,000, of which 40% were Jews. In 1942, with help from the Ukrainians, the Germans transported or killed the entire Jewish population. Supposedly in 1970, there were about 6,200 Jews who returned there. There was no synagogue left standing, but kosher meat could be obtained. It is understandable that our forebears, that's our father's family, were bakers, since the area was a center for milling grain and wheat. So I thought that was just an interesting historical point.
I wanted to get the...
Go ahead.
Just how was near Kiev, is what I did.
Yeah. The, I married, and I think I covered that. I married in 1957. That was March 2nd, 1957, in New York. My wife, at that time, age 29, was a singer and a jack of all trades. She worked in the Mademoiselle magazine, and then went in to have her own jewelry shop with antique jewelry, and she also she started a new profession in New York, which has become a very important thing, part of the advertising business, called a stylist. She became a freelance stylist, and a stylist is a person who sets up the photograph. You see a fashion photograph, and maybe they're advertising dresses. Obviously, the lady who's standing there has to have a hat, has to have a purse, has to have a shoe, and has to have perhaps a dog or a suitcase or whatever the case may be, or maybe a man with her. She's the one that put all those pieces together to make up the photograph. She was also taking singing lessons, and as a matter of fact, her best friend during those years was, and to some extent I guess is, Beverly Sills. Beverly Sills stuck to her gun. She was not a popular singer at that time. But my wife gave it up to come with me as my wife and to have a family. We moved to Pittsburgh in 1961. We had been married, and I pointed out that we went to Texas, and that was terribly unsatisfactory for a Jewish girl from Brooklyn. And we ended up going back to New York. We lived in the Bronx for a period of time because I was at one of your hospitals in the Bronx. However, that attended, and I came to Pittsburgh with my wife. We then had, by that time, two children. The first, Adam, was born at New York Hospital on 72nd Street. The second child came right on his heels. She was Emily, born on July 17, 1960, and she was born at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York, on 5th Avenue, New York. So when we came to Pittsburgh, we came literally with two infants. Adam was about 2 1/2, and Emily was less than one when I started my professional career. We then lived in Churchill, kind of rather large house with a big yard, and lived in a section called Sherwood Forest. This was a section primarily not Jewish, though there were a couple of Jewish families with whom we maintained some contact over the years. But it was a countrified atmosphere, and I was anxious to not move to Squirrel Hill because it did not appear to be, have a countrified environment. And I wanted to bring up my kids where I had always said they could walk to school kicking a can. Something that most kids in New York City and where we had been in Boston and so forth didn't have the opportunity of doing. So that's why we picked Churchill. We lived there for 5 years, and it was rather inconvenient because, believe it or not, my wife coming from Brooklyn did not drive an automobile. And she had to learn to drive when we arrived in Pittsburgh, but never quite felt comfortable on the Pittsburgh Parkway, Parkway East, I guess that's called. And I never felt too comfortable on that parkway either. However, I started my practice by going to outlying hospitals, and I think we've covered that, but it was convenient from that point of view because I was being in Churchill, which is east of Pittsburgh. I was then closer to places like Greensburg, Gannett, and so forth, and sort of in between there and Montefiore Hospital, where I had centered my practice that time. The children, the first child, Adam, my wife was concerned that he was not getting enough exposure to other children, so we enrolled him at the Hebrew Institute preschool program at age about 3 1/2. They had a bus at that time, the Hebrew Institute, that would come around to the different neighborhoods and pick children up and take them to this preschool program. It was, to me, a very traumatic event to see a child that age get on a bus and go with strangers, but he quickly got used to it.
Hi, sit down.
And my second child, I think we made some other arrangements. I really can't remember what her arrangements were, but she was much younger at that time. It was a pleasant life, but as I say, it was remote. It was not part of the Jewish community. It was difficult to get back and forth. So finally, we bought a house after 5 years on Shady Avenue at Shady and Aylesboro. It's a very lovely house, but the neighborhood was not ideal. It was a very busy neighborhood. And it was while, just as we moved into that house, that we had our third child. It was just before that that we had our third child. His name is Philip. And he was born on April 24th, 1964. Our early life with the children was very pleasant. We, of course, like all families, very tied up with our kids. They went to public schools at the outset. I was very set on that idea. However, and as a matter of fact, the children went to Linden School, which was close to our second home in Pittsburgh, walking back and forth every day, which is what I had always hoped to arrange. I must say that during this period of my life, I was totally preoccupied with family and profession, and did literally nothing in the Jewish community as far as contributions to committees, and although I did contribute financially, I was not really involved in working for the fundraising or organizations and so forth. But it was not till quite a bit later, when my kids got a little older, became somewhat more independent. Somewhere along the line, we decided that Adam, who was a very bright young kid, should go to Shadyside. At that time, it was very difficult to get into Shadyside for a Jewish boy. You didn't get into Shadyside unless, of course, you had some political connections, which we did. And a member of the board was Stanley Hahn, who recommended Adam. Stanley Hahn happened to be a very close friend of my stepbrother, Lester Hamburg, and that's how that arrangement was made. But it was interesting that in order to get that kind of an education for a child, it was impossible if he was Jewish unless you had something. You simply had to go to public schools or leave town. It changed. Things improved. We started after that to develop Jewish schools, and I think those Jewish schools became a great contribution. So Adam started the Shadyside at, I guess, the sixth grade, and went by bus, continued to do that. My preoccupation in my free time was to go out to Shadyside to see him play ball, whatever team he happened to be on. Everybody had to do that. We were involved, I guess, like most Jewish parents are. Our only real activities outside the home in those days, and I say are because Siddell was equally involved, had to do with musical expression. My wife happened to be an unusually talented cook and party giver, so that we used this talent, and I happened to have a liking for this sort of thing. And we gave some very nice parties, and we developed a relationship with the Pittsburgh Symphony, and later the Pittsburgh Opera. And it was through these connections that we began to meet some very interesting people. We had the connections from New York, and they would come to Pittsburgh and meet and develop a relationship, and then we would entertain them. And this way we met more and more people from stage, theater, and music. One of our closest friends during those years was a fellow by the name of Carl Kritz, who was the associate conductor of the Pittsburgh Symphony. As a matter of fact, his wife was a patient of mine. And it was through him that we met many people in the musical theater, because he was in charge of the Pittsburgh Light Opera Theater during those years. So we always made it a point for every show that they had in Pittsburgh, during which time they would bring the leads, at least, from out of town, though the course were always in town people. We would always have a party for them. That started when we still lived in Churchill and continued into Pittsburgh. And so our friendships developed mainly along those lines. We were either symphony people or management or people in the community who were either teaching music or involved in music. And among them was Charlie Rosenblum, who had been vice president of the symphony, and Lucille Rosenblum, both now deceased. Lucille died at age 95 just recently. And that's sort of was the direction that our life took. We did not develop friendships in the usual fashion with doctors and other women my wife's age, and it sort of was a more interesting life, at least from our point of view. And as you're interviewing me now and you look around the room, you see pictures of many of these people who have been guests in our home. As a result of that, the people that I'm looking there, like Alexis Weisenberg, Chaim Potok, the famous author, there's a picture of William Steinberg with my wife at our summer home. There's a picture behind Howard of Sasha Snyder. Sasha Snyder was a wonderful, wonderful man, probably one of the greatest violin teachers who ever made it to this country. He was originally from Russia, a lovable person, a good friend of Isaac Stern. Isaac Stern is in that same picture, and that person, Marshall, was the symphony the manager. Those are the kinds of contacts. Next, there's a picture of Sadell and me with Fema Bronfman, young, wonderful pianist, probably will be one of the great pianists of our time, and so forth. So we got involved in that kind of an activity. I'll stop there. She's president of the county medical center. So at any rate, so our life went on. The kids grew up. We tried to get my daughter Emily to go to private school as Adam did, but she insisted, I guess she inherited that from me, insisted on going to public school, so she went to Shadyside, to Taylor Allardyce. It was always a concern of mine because we know that Taylor Allardyce was not a good place to be for many reasons in those days. But she loved it and had many friends, and we managed to get her into Winchester Thurston for 1 year. I made a deal with her. If you go there and you still want to go back to Taylor Allardyce after you've been there, then we'll agree to that. So we did agree. And she didn't want to stay there. She spent 1 year and did very well. But she went back to Taylor Allardyce. Then came the story of their education, which is an issue of some concern to parents. I made it a point not to be concerned, and I was too busy as a physician, and I left that to them. I learned a lesson from that. After Adam's experience, which may be of some interest from the Jewish historical point of view, I learned that you can't leave all these decisions to children. They need guidance. And let me just point out what happened. The Shadyside advisors suggested that he apply to a school called Hobart. And that was fine, he was accepted. And he went there, and I didn't like certain things about it, but I kept my mouth shut. But finally, Adam wanted to go to Israel for a year away from school, and he had a terrible time convincing the authorities that it was all right to take a year away in Israel. He came back and then had a terrible time convincing them that they should give him credit for any of the time he spent there in school, which was, as we all know, very intense kind of educational process. Finally he did, but the atmosphere in a school like that, even, and this I'm talking about the 1970s, which we consider modern times, even then was still just slightly anti-Semitic. We went to visit him many times. We were very dismayed because he joined a non-Jewish fraternity, and there was no such thing as a Jewish fraternity. And
what was the place?
Hobart. The only, we were so much dismayed by the fact that the main preoccupation in the fraternity house was booze, beer. I guess that's true whether in all fraternity houses, but we couldn't get over the fact of how much that preoccupied their activities and their minds and their parties and so forth. At any rate, we were not too pleased with that educational process. So when it came to Emily, she had already started on an educational process in, at her choice in American University in Washington. And I didn't like it for many reasons. I was too detailed to go into it. They didn't seem to have a plan. There was no way to deal with anybody. Emily didn't know what she wanted to do. So she then went to Israel when Adam went, and she was then only a sophomore. And she came back, and they would not. She went to Ulpan for 3 months and really studied Hebrew, and then took Hebrew she went to Haifa University, and they would not give her credit for Hebrew, for example. I was so furious about that, because obviously she had much more language experience. They said, their answer was, well, of course, we don't have Hebrew classes, therefore we can't give credit. But there's this sort of, I always felt that there was this subliminal hostility.
Wait a minute, at Haifa she couldn't get credit?
No, when she came back here. Yeah. So that was just one sample of what we didn't like about the thing. And I finally took the bull by the horns and I said, we'll take you out of the school. Of course, Adam was already in his senior year, so there was no chance of changing his mind. But we took Emily out, and I arranged for her to go to Penn State, where I had graduated. And the next problem we had was trying to get her out of Penn State. She loved it so much. She found it to be a most enlightening experience, and she actually stayed there and worked for the newspapers in town for a couple of years. Finally, her mother talked her into moving to New York, and we decided this on a cooperative basis because Beverly Sills' daughter was the same age. And Beverly Sills' daughter was living at home, and they had a problem. She's deaf and doesn't speak too well, so she does hold down a very good job with the telephone company. And they wanted to try to move her out to try to get some more self-reliance, and I came up with the idea that maybe we ought to put the girls in an apartment together. So that's what happened, and Emily finally went to New York, lived with Beverly and Peter their daughter for a while until we found the apartment, and then they moved into an apartment, but it didn't work out. The young lady could not function too well outside of her mother and father's home, so she went back to live at her own home and stays there to this day. Emily, in the meantime, has gotten into the publishing business, and is now one of the leading executives of the Meredith Publishing. As a matter of fact, she's an executive committee meeting this week. They have a place in Des Moines, Iowa. Philip is the third child, and he went to Penn State also. He happened to have dyslexia, so we sent him to a private high school in New York. And he did very well, and though Penn State was reluctant to accept somebody with dyslexia, they did accept him. He did very well. He played lacrosse for 4 years while he was there. And when he came out, he was trained in the hotel administration business, but he did that for 2 years and hated it. Decided he wanted to go into theater. So he's been doing that for the past 4 or 5 years. He's had some bit parts here and there. He's traveled Europe in the company of the Jesus Christ Superstar. I might say that as part of this historical information, his being in that company prompted Saddell and me to go to Germany, which I hadn't visited since after World War II, when I was with Joint Distribution Committee, which will appear as a separate tape record of my experiences there. But nonetheless, we found it a very enlightening experience, something that I had never been actually to Berlin, and when the play was in Berlin, we spent 8 days there. Bitter winter, but nonetheless, the experience was worthwhile because it was at that time, this was about 4 or 5 years ago, they opened as a museum the place where the plaque that killed all the Jews was made. I'm trying to think of the name of that place.
Wannsee.
Yeah. Wannsee. That's it. And so we visited that, and we also visited the museum. They had a museum which was not exactly a Holocaust museum, but it was a museum showing the history of the Jews. One of the busiest, most active museums I've ever seen. And there aren't that many Jews in Germany, so you know that the Germans were actually going to see that. And the museum was located right near the former Reichstag, and right near what had been previously the headquarters of the Gestapo. So they had also there a Gestapo museum, which is just 50 or 75 yards from the main museum. And that Gestapo museum showed pictorially what had taken place in that Gestapo headquarters as far as torturing the Jews. And so that, it's interesting how one thing led to another. That's an experience we never would have had had it not been for our son wanting to be in theater.
Well, was this play in German or English?
The play?
Yeah.
It was in English. Everybody speaks English. Well, most everybody speaks English. The play was in English, and it's interesting that that play sold out in Germany. They were there, I think they were there 8 months between Germany and Austria, and they played to sold-out audiences every night in major auditoriums.
Was that Jesus Christ?
Jesus Christ Superstar. At any rate, this young man is precious, wonderful young man. He's still in New York, trying to make it in theater. In the meantime, he's working in as a trainer in one of the, you know, this has become a big thing, personal trainers. So he makes his living by doing that. He has a half dozen or so clients every day. And then he goes out on auditions and takes singing lessons and does all of that sort of thing. Aside from the children, Sibel and I have continued to become part of the community from a musical point of view. But about, early 80s, perhaps 1979 or 80, we were somewhat concerned. Sibel particularly was concerned, and I credit her with this, because she did not really come from a Jewish educational background, but her family was quite Jewish by their experiences and their practices, but it didn't really belong to a synagogue and had not really worked for Jewish affairs or done anything like that. She was brought up Jewish, period. There was no embellishments. In New York, that's a very common thing, that there are no they don't belong to committees, and everybody isn't on the board of the Federation, and everybody doesn't belong to a synagogue. As a matter of fact, one of the striking shocks to her system was when a friend of mine came to visit us in New York, a friend from Pittsburgh. One of the first questions he asked was, "What synagogue do you belong to?" And she didn't even know what he was talking about. You know, people in Pittsburgh assume that that's part of your way of life, but it certainly isn't in New York. But nonetheless, getting back to the main point, she was disturbed by the fact that my first two children did not really have good Hebrew education, Adam and Emily. And it is our fault. We joined the Reformed Synagogue, and it was that Reformed Synagogue where schooling was not intact, so the children didn't really want to learn to be Jewish. And did not want to learn Hebrew. And Adam had a bar mitzvah there, and we were very disappointed in the intensity of the educational process. So the second son, who was 5 years younger than Adam, Sibel made up her mind she was going to investigate this and do it differently. And that's how our first venture into the Jewish community my first venture in Jewish community began. She decided, she went to see the Hebrew Institute. And it was, I guess, about Philip was born in 1964, he was nine, so it was 1973. So in 1973, she enrolled him in the Hebrew Institute, Hebrew classes. And he didn't like it very much, but he was a good boy, and he did what he was told to do, what he had to do. And so he learned, prepared for his bar mitzvah under Dr. Solomon Abrams. Well, I had known Dr. Abrams for many years because of my years of previous activity in the Jewish community, and he got me involved in the Hebrew Institute. Eventually, I became a member of the board, and eventually an officer, and eventually then president of the Hebrew Institute, where I served the usual term of 3 years, and found that my involvement with the Hebrew Institute was great,